Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of Elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit EnduranceWarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's EnduranceWarranty.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, and so on. My name is Dan Selke. His name is Daniel Roman. And there's a bug somewhere in this room. So if you're watching the live feed, you might get to see me commit a murder on a bug. Daniel, nice. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here for our Game of Thrones themed podcast where murders are not only accepted but encouraged. I hope you find that bug.
It's huge. Yeah,
I am sorry you're besieged by a bug. That's never fun, especially when you have a live recording to do. But how are you, Dan? And hi, everyone in the chat. How are you doing? Shout us out if you're here.
Hey, good to see everybody. Hello, Ben. Hello, Ash. Julie, thank you for getting up this early in the morning. We'll try to make it worth your while with an entertaining, high-energy, informative podcast/live show that may or may not contain an attack on my person by a dragon or dragonfly.
Nice.
Okay, Daniel, let's jump into it because we have things to discuss.
Yes, we do.
We have some good stuff today. Not only are we going to touch on some ongoing TV shows, not only are we going to bring you some updates and some thoughts on some things that are happening in this space, we're going to do a little bit different and review The Hedge Knight, the book by George R. R. Martin that is going to be turned into, or has been turned into, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the next Game of Thrones people show coming out early next year. But that'll be in a minute. First, let's visit the sandy coast of Wales. I don't even want to try and pronounce the name of the place where they actually are, where they are filming House of the Dragon. And are they ever filming House of the Dragon season 3? They're doing a lot of this lately. We're getting a lot of shots of them out on the beach, out in the waves, out on the land shooting stuff. I guess it's just that time of the production cycle.
Yeah. So, I mean, spoiler warning for House of the Dragon season 3, Fire and Blood here. Just about everything we're going to look at in these images, which have all been posted online. I think House of the Dragons posted them.
And
the thing with, you know, this production where it's out filming in public is enterprising photographers can go and get pictures. And House of the Dragon doesn't have anywhere near the same security as like Game of Thrones did late in its run, where they were trying to keep spoilers people had been waiting for from the books. They didn't want you to know Jon Snow was still alive. So that was a different ballgame. Here, you know, they're out filming essentially the Battle of the Gullet, which is the big battle that we're expecting to see right at the top of the season. It's a naval battle between the fleet of Corlys Velaryon and the Triarchy that we saw kind of get set up at the end of last season. And yeah, they're on a beach, which, you know, if you know anything about naval battles, or even if you don't, the fact that we're going to look at beach photos, you can probably take to mean the battle doesn't go well for some people because, you know, these ships are not out at sea. They are wreckage. They're debris. So, Dan, what's our first image we're going to look at today?
All right. This image of wreckage and debris. This, by the way, they're on the island of Landwin, which is spelled Landwin, but with two L's and two D's, in Wales. The thing to note here is that there is the prow, the masthead, that's the thing, of that lady in the background, the wooden lady that goes on the head of Corlys Velaryon's flagship.
Yeah.
So far as we can tell, it's by itself, which I think means his flagship gets decimated, which doesn't happen in the book.
Yeah. You wrote an interesting thing about this today. So you can read Dan's kind of analysis of the Corlys Velaryon thing on winterscoming.net. But I forgot that the ship, again, spoilers here for Fire and Blood, late in the story, eventually, when Corlys finally does die, because this is a historical story, everyone will eventually die. No one's still alive by the time of Game of Thrones. He's eventually buried on his ship. His ship is sunk to the bottom of the ocean with him on it because he was the most famous sailor in the Seven Kingdoms, yada yada yada. So during the Battle of the Gullet, we're going to look at some more images in a second of this, but essentially there's this big sea battle, there are dragons involved, and also as part of this, the island of Driftmark gets sacked. So this is, you know, this is why Driftmark is not really a power in Game of Thrones. It kind of never goes back to its previous amount of prestige and power after the Battle of the Gullet. That's kind of the end for Driftmark as a major player in Westeros. So you know, it looks like they may wreck Corlys's ship, which that's not that big. You know, I don't think that change particularly matters. I'm wondering if this means he's either going to be on Driftmark when it gets sacked, or he's going to be stuck somewhere else and can't get there. What do you think this means for Corlys, Dan?
I'm sure he'll live because they need him to live. I don't like them changing even little things. I feel like if you respect the source material, you should try to be faithful when you can. I feel like even small changes are just indicative of a lack of interest in following it. But you're right, it's not that big of a deal. So the ship gets wrecked in a ship battle, whatever. Next up, we have some cool images that came out just today of assembled armies on the beach. It's hard to tell exactly who they are, but so far as we can tell, they are Velaryon soldiers, Corlys's guys, and Triarchy soldiers. So nasty, filthy pirates. And they're going to be fighting. How do we know they're going to be fighting? Because in another image, you can see a bunch of them dead on the beach, like so. Yeah. My guess is this is the sack because it is a naval battle and these people are on the land. So it's not part of like the actual sea battle. So I'm going to guess this is the sack of Driftmark. So there's going to be a battle on the beach as folks try to burn Driftmark, try to seize Driftmark, try to pillage Driftmark, and the Velaryon soldiers are having none of it. But we know that they do succeed, at least in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they literally pillage like Corlys's castle on Driftmark in the book. So, yeah, it is. It is a shame. It has the potential to be a really, you know, rousing, tragic moment for the series, which, like, you know, House of the Dragon at its heart, like the Dance of the Dragons is a tragedy. Like, this is essentially George R. R. Martin's version of a Shakespearean tragedy, this family tearing itself apart for power. And there are a few points that really illustrate that, but the Battle of Driftmark is a pretty big one. The Battle of the Gullet, which includes Driftmark, main characters will die in this battle. Would be a shocker if they were just like, psych, we killed off Corlys. But that is almost certainly not going to happen because that would be about as big of a deviation as you could do, because Corlys has a lot left to do after the Gullet. But they're hard at work on the Battle of the Gullet right now, which they've been hyping a lot. They've talked a lot about how it'll be one of the most complicated sequences ever on television, which I'm reserving judgment on. But I hope that's true. Because it's a big moment. And especially after season 2 ended with kind of a weak little plop because they had to cut the Battle of the Gullet, which was originally planned as kind of the finale for season two. I think House of the Dragon has something to prove coming back this year. So
I do too. I wish them the best. I hope it's as good as they want it to be. Ben Jack says he assumes those are bodies washed by the shore. It's possible. I guess I assume that they were battle dead because other shots show us Valyrians and Triarchy soldiers on the beach together. And when you get those guys together, I tell you, they get to talking and they get to killing each other and dead bodies start to pile up.
Yeah, it's definitely possible that, you know, this is a really bloody battle. I would not be surprised if we see bodies just like wash up on the beach in places for Driftmark, maybe even for Dragonstone, depending on how they do things, because kind of the layout is like there's this bay and like Driftmark's kind of at the bottom and Dragonstone's kind of at the top. So it's all kind of in the same vicinity, which is why the dragons are able to get involved in the whole Battle of the Gullet thing, because they're really not that far away. But yeah, so this is the big thing that's going on right now in House of the Dragon season three filming. We know they're working on the gullet. It's a very, very important thing for the show to get right. And I hope they do.
Me too.
Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's data brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.
Chris says both queens will go crazy after the Battle of the Gullet. Ideally, Chris, my worst fear is that in this show, they won't go so much crazy as they will give orders, they won't be obeyed, and then they will be, ugh, if only I was listened to, things would be going well.
Yeah.
But we'll see if that happens when it happens. I am cynical about the show, aren't I?
You are.
Anyway,
you
are. I was really burned by that second season. That last image was of Bethany Antonia, who plays Bela Targaryen.
Oh, okay.
Who is on set, which is cool. We don't know what exactly it means. Also, Abu Bakar Salim, who plays Alan of Hull, was around. Steve Toussaint, who plays Bolas Valerian, was around. Bela is not involved in the Battle of the Gullet in the book. Like, she doesn't ride her dragon into it. I could see them changing that up. I don't think it'd be that big of a deal. I could see her maybe just surveying the damage with her grandfather. And what is Alan of Hull to her? Illegitimate step cousin?
No, her. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it'd be an illegitimate second cousin or something like that.
Nice. Well done.
But yeah, so that is a little bit of a change if Bela's involved. I kind of like that. They've aged Bela up in the show. Mm-hmm. Bela is younger in the book. She's more like the age that Arya is around the beginning of A Song of Ice and Fire in the book, if I remember right. So they've already aged her up. They've already had her out doing patrols on Moondancer. And in the book, there's also a character named Nettles, who we'll talk about in a second. Nettles is another Dragonseed dragon rider who is involved in the Battle of the Gullet, but since the show is doing something presumably very different with the Nettles material, there's room to put Bela in kind of instead of her, I think.
Yeah, it's not one of the things I get too upset about. With Nettles, they seem to be replacing her with Bela's sister, Rhaena.
Yeah,
it's reported is filming stuff, shortened hair, sheepskin dress, training a wild dragon in the Vale. I don't like it, but because I really like Nettles in the book. I wish they'd kept her. I don't know why they didn't. And it's hard for me to imagine a version where it will improve on what was in the book. And I can imagine many versions where it will be worse. But you know what? It could be spectacular.
What were you saying about cynicism? Yeah, I think, you know, Nettles is definitely something I am very much like juries out. Like, on premise right now, I hate that they have changed the nettles stuff and they don't seem to be including nettles. We've got a few commenters, Chris saying nettles should be in the show. Nettles ties into Prince Damon's story. Yes, she does. I think nettles, if the show just fully excludes nettles, I think it's an enormous missed opportunity.
It's going to exclude nettles.
Yeah, it seems likely that it's going to exclude nettles and maybe have, you know, I hope Reyna doesn't do something ridiculous like take on an alias as nettles or something. But anyway, there's also been, we don't have an image of this. I thought the image was kind of hard to see. But reportedly, there are images of Reyna, who's played by Phoebe Campbell, in, like you said, that sheepskin outfits, which Nettle's whole thing is she's befriending this dragon named Sheepstealer. She feeds Sheepstealer sheep until Sheepstealer realizes maybe she's okay and they become friends. We did see Reyna meet Sheepstealer the dragon. So we know the dragon is in the show. We haven't seen how she will befriend this dragon, presumably by maybe feeding it sheep. But yeah, the nettles thing, that's one change that I am very much like prepared to be upset because it feels very, yeah, I just, that's one where I really don't get the logic on excluding nettles because she brings something very unique and I think very like compelling to the Dance of the Dragon story as basically a commoner who it's kind of hinted like maybe she has some relation to the Targaryens, but it is so not spelled out that it's like just pure speculation. But yeah, so lots going on in the House of the Dragons set world. You have anything else you want to say about nettles, Reyna, Aegon? I think there was something about
Just an interview where the actor said it'll be a new character. Looking forward to that. But I think we've talked this before. Let's move on to other stuff. Daniel, what's happening in the world of other big high fantasy TV shows that have made us sad lately?
Yeah, we're kind of doing the tour of the big fantasy shows today, aside from Rings of Power, because they're just filming. There's nothing really big to talk about with Rings of Power. But there is for both The Wheel of Time and The Witcher. So let's start with The Wheel of Time. So as everybody who listens to this show knows by now, The Wheel of Time, which was Prime Video's fantasy series based on the books by Robert Jordan, it was canceled after its third and by far best season in May, I think, mid-May. Yeah. So a little less than 2 months ago, Prime decided they were going to not continue with the show. And the rights are kind of weird because Sony also co-produces it, blah, blah, blah. Anywho, since then, fans have been working very, very hard to save this series. There's this whole campaign that is Save Watt, Save WOT, basically. They do social media days. They have a website, savewatt.com. They've been flying, you know, a banner over the Amazon studios. They've been putting billboards up all over the world, like New York City, Los Angeles, Sao Paulo, Brazil, London, Sydney, Australia. Like, they've been everywhere with this. But we haven't heard whether anything was going to be saved, whether there's really hope. And there's a social media post that went up from Rosamund Pike, who played Moiraine, kind of the lead of the show, arguably, for its early seasons, at least. And she kind of did a montage that felt like she was saying goodbye to the show. It was Instagram stories, so it's probably not up anymore, but you can find it archived on the internets, kind of going through a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff and ending with this image that we have on the screen, which is her holding up her Aes Sedai ring and saying, "I hang up my ring." There's a feeling of finality to the Rosamund Pike post that I think a lot of the other posts from actors haven't always had, or like Rafe Judkin's message, the showrunner, didn't really have. This one from Rosamund Pike is like, okay, doesn't sound great. Sounds like she's moving on. What do you think, Dan? Is this the final nail in the coffin for The Wheel of Time?
Yes. I mean, I never thought that it was really going to be, well, I guess I held out hope for like the beginning part of it. But no, yeah. The Wheel of Time was canceled. It's over a month ago. It's very likely not going to come back. Doesn't mean that this fan effort was futile. I think it was very inspiring and cool to see fans come together and work so hard at this. But no, wasn't going to come back. TV's changing. Fantasy's changing. the time for a big show like The Wheel of Time is over. Maybe it will come back into vogue in a decade or so. But that time has passed and it shall move on and so shall we. And it's a shame. And just I respect all the fans who made this happen, who really came together and gave it their all. That's very, very impressive.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is probably the most coordinated fan effort I have seen. You know, up there with The Expanse, which is kind of the very famous one that actually worked, where Sci-Fi canceled the show and fans rallied and managed to get Amazon to pick it up. Yes. One of the very, very big differences, I think, with The Expanse, and why that worked and this one doesn't seem to have worked, is that The Expanse didn't have this rights quagmire where they, you know, Sony owns the rights to make the show, but Amazon produced the show. Who has what rights in order to even be able to shop it? Blah, blah, blah. With The Expanse, they had a studio, Alcon Entertainment, who produced the show for Sci-Fi. And when Sci-Fi canceled it, Alcon still had all the rights, all the sets, all the props. And they were able to like work with fans. Like they let fans know, hey, we're striking sets today. This is the day to do X, Y, Z to try to gain attention and see if we can delay that a little bit. So like the studio was part of the coordinated effort. Whereas here it feels like Amazon and Sony could not have cared less. Like that makes it a very much an uphill battle. Like there was a report a while back that Sony wasn't shopping the series around to other streamers. Like they don't seem to have had the appetite for saving the show in the first place.
Which is very different. It's like you said, the rights were the rights were a different situation, but also the appetite for big shows that would draw in subscribers was bigger when The Expanse got saved. Things have changed. That was a loosening of the belt and feasting at the Thanksgiving table time period for streaming services. And now it is a tightening of the belt and only make things if they're kind of surefire things. The Thanksgiving table has been stripped bare. We had nothing to eat type of period.
Yeah.
And that's just things go through boom and bust cycles. Things go through cycles. And that's where we are now.
That is true. And I, you know, the sad thing about that is a show like The Wheel of Time was always going to go long enough that it was going to be questionable how it fit into a cycle like that, because it's, you know, they were going to need to do like 8 seasons at least to tell the whole story. So it really does to me. The thing that galls me the most about it is it really feels like Amazon or Sony or whoever's investment in telling the whole story was very middling at best. Like they weren't that concerned with whether they actually did right by this very, very iconic IP that they had. No. More so just, you know, trying to catch on the trend for a little bit. You're right. The Expanse, when it got saved, was a very different time. That was, I believe, 2018, which was, you know, that's around the time the Game of Thrones final season came out in early 2019. So studios were ready to throw money at that gold rush. And The Expanse kind of fit in there because it was an already established show with a very good studio behind it that really knew what it was doing. Had the support of the authors who were writers on the show. Like there were all sorts of reasons why that worked. But yeah, so The Wheel of Time, it feels like a little bit of a death knell, this post from Rosamund Pike. And like Ash Harmon said in the chat, she was so deep involved so deeply. I'm sure the cancellation has been very hard for her to take. Totally. I mean, Rosamund Pike was not only one of the leads on the show, she was also a producer on the show, and not just in name, but like I've seen interviews where like Rafe Judkins talked about how she was very hands-on with the actors. So it was almost like she was the actor producer on the show in terms of them having a little bit more of a voice in the production and being able to work with them and stuff. She also is doing audiobook narrations for the books. That's obviously a separate contract, but like, I don't know if that's going to keep going, which is sad because that would be another abandoned thing. I hope it keeps going because I think people seem to have really liked her audiobook narrations. But yeah, so that's generally that's what's going on with the Wheel of Time right now. I know the Save Wok campaign is still going. I know they're still doing stuff like, you know, mailing stuff to streaming studios. But the chances seem slimmer than they did a week ago, essentially.
To quote Twin Peaks, see you in 25 years. Daniel, what's going on with The Witcher?
Yeah, so on the flip side, things are good in Witcherland. The Witcher is currently filming its fifth and final season, which is not getting canceled, despite some very bad clickbait articles. This is just the end of the show. Show's ending with five seasons. It's the right amount of seasons for this story, in my opinion. I've long held that five seasons was the right amount. So there are a few different pieces of news here to go over. The first is that there's a leak from Redanian Intelligence, which is kind of like the premier Witcher leak scoop site. They have spies everywhere. They know what you ate for breakfast. They have found scripts or something. So inside sources told them how the show will explain Geralt's recast from Henry Cavill to Liam Hemsworth on screen. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit and explain what they said. So this could be a spoiler for The Witcher. It is a leak, so we don't know if it will pan out. But based on having read the books, I think this is fairly likely, actually. And we've kind of been saying this since the recast was announced, even. So essentially, in Baptism of Fire, which is the book that this season is going to be adapting mostly, we're introduced to a young girl named Nimue, who you might know the name from Arthurian legend. It is that Nimue. Yeah. And she's talking to a wandering storyteller who we know has been cast for the show. His name is Strabog in the show. He's played by Clive Russell, who is the Blackfish in Game of Thrones. And basically, he goes from town to town telling stories. And this is around 100 years after Geralt of Rivia lived. And essentially, he goes to Nimue's village and he tells stories about Geralt of Rivia. And this kind of sets Nimue, it's like a meta storyline in The Witcher, where she then tries to discern the truth of the myths of Geralt of Rivia. And that goes right through to the end of the series. So Redanian Intelligence basically found out that the season is most likely going to start with this storyteller, Clive Russell's character, going to Nimue's village and starting to tell stories about Geralt, and the kids will keep interjecting, saying, no, I heard it was like this. I heard Geralt was like this. And basically, while that's happening, it will show us a montage of Liam Hemsworth as Geralt doing different scenes that we already saw Henry Cavill do. So like the fight with Vilgefortz of Roggeveen that was in season three, we know they refilmed that with Liam Hemsworth, or part of it. They refilmed the beach part. So essentially, it will do some sort of thing, which could either be fun or very cheesy. Jury's out. Where it's comes
that to sounds like The Witcher.
It sounds like The Witcher. Yes. Feels very on brand. Comes around to this idea of this Strabog is now going to tell the real story of Geralt of Rivia and how it ended. And apparently in that version, he looks like Liam Hemsworth. so it sounds goofy when you say it. It could be fun. I think the thing to emphasize here is, one, this is a leak. We don't know if it's true. Two, this actually, it's not the show jumping the shark. I'm sure people will think it is. But this is like tonally very, very, very accurate to what Sapkowski did with the later books in the series, which were pretty divisive. Like, people didn't know if they liked that when those books came out. So I'm sure people will not know if they like it when the show came out. What do you think of this rumor, Dan? Do you think this is accurate? Do you think it's too out there? What are your thoughts?
Well, I haven't run as far to the book series as you have, but it sounds fun. And I mean, if your main very popular star leaves under strange circumstances, you got to make lemons with lemonade. You got to do something.
Yeah.
So they might as well. My prediction, I don't know. I feel like the Witcher is going to come out and just to, you know, mild fanfare. I can't see it being a giant hit at this point with the changes it's going through. But maybe. I don't dislike the show. I think it's been fun. I think it is cheesy and fun. And I think this changes in keeping with that. Sure. Go off, Witcher. Have a good time.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. I think the narrative has turned so hard against The Witcher that there's no way it can really come back and be a big, massive thing in its final two seasons. I think the evidence for that is kind of pretty clear with season three, which a lot of people hated on, even though it's one of the better seasons, like, in my opinion, like having watched all three in a row when season three came out. I think season three was probably was miles better than the second, and at least as good, if not better, than the first. But
you know, it is. It's Henry Cavill parasocial love. That's what it is. People
that is true.
Love that big hunk of man. And I don't blame them or anything, but it feels like a lot of people heard he was leaving and decided at that point, any show that hurts my precious baby Cavill is not a show that I will give my love to.
Yes.
And they took their love away and they put it in a tower and they locked the door and it remains there to this day.
Yeah, I think that's true. I actually wrote an analysis about this when season three came out. That was like, it's time to talk about The Witcher's complicated fandom, I think it was called. That was the Henry Cavill side of it. And then also the fact that so many people who've played the games have very strong opinions about what the series should be and what it feels like to be The Witcher, but they haven't read the books. So, like, you know, a lot of people complained that there were more politics in the kingdoms in season three, but like, that is the where the story is. Or like, Geralt didn't fight enough monsters, not realizing that they added like five fights for Geralt with monsters that were not in that book. He doesn't fight a single monster in the book that season three was based on. So yeah, it is complicated. The Witcher has a complicated fandom and a hard thing to overcome. But like Julie says, I'm happy to give Liam Hemsworth a chance too.
Totally.
I hope he does well.
They need to do two things. They need to A, make the show good, which is the easy part. And then B, Liam Hemsworth needs to build a PC on camera and take a shirt off. Like, if they do that, I think they'll have a chance.
Those are the things. It wouldn't hurt if he bought a horse that he rode too. You know,
got it. Instagram stories, just making sure you're riding back and forth. Really sell this rebrand.
Yes, we can. So that's what's going on with The Witcher show. There's also been a lot of news in The Witcher book world. So starting with, let's start with The Shade, because it's kind of fun, kind of funny. So Andrzej Sapkowski wrote all the Witcher books.
Is that how you say it?
I think so. I thought it was Sapkowski. I've heard, I'm trusting Henry Cavill here, because he says Sapkowski.
Oh, no, so, the last name's fine. You said like Andrzej?
I think it's Andrzej, yeah.
Oh, I was like, whatever, go on.
Maybe I'm wrong. Anywho, the Polish author of The Witcher, whose last name is Sapkowski, he is kind of famously grumpy and curmudgeonly. The dude has a very dry, very blunt sense of humor. He's in his late 70s. So he did this panel at a book festival in Poland earlier this month, where he basically shaded George R. R. Martin. He kind of, before fans could say, like, will you write more books? He said, unlike George R. R. Martin, when I say I'll write something, I will. Which, ouch. But he then went on to be like, I know George personally. Like, and I get why he's having problems, because if someone adapted one of my books and then went past the written material and just made it up as they went along, I would be really upset too. So he kind of like threw shade and also sympathy in equal measure. Did you have any thoughts on this? Because
he said that it's funny. Like, if a network adapted my books went past them, I'd wonder if it was worth writing the rest too. And I'm like, I don't think that's George R. R. Martin's problem. But no, it's in keeping with Mr. Sapkowski's grouchy persona. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, whether it's Martin feels it's worth writing them or not, like, I'm sure that there's a part of him that really wants it done. I think
it done.
Yeah. The psychological aspect of it, I'm sure was difficult, just kind of across the board. But at the same time, you know, what was HBO supposed to do? You know, they got to the end of what was written. They can't just cancel Game of Thrones because there are no more books. Even though that would have been, you know, they just can't, they end it with Jon Snow dying. That's our series.
That would be funny. I'm not going to lie.
In retrospect, I don't know that it would have been funny at the time.
Bubo has read the new Witcher novel. Does that mean you've read Crossroads of Ravens, the brand new one, Bubo?
Yeah. So it came out in Poland late last year. Oh. So I would assume you've read the Polish version. Oh, okay. Bubo said, I would say he, as in Sapkowski, better be silent. It's better to hold new novels than release this. So it sounds like you really did not like it. So for context here for people, Crossroads of Ravens is what this new book is called. It came out in Poland late last year. The cover for the US edition just dropped today, which you can see up on the screen. It's cool. A prequel. So it's a standalone prequel that is the earliest Witcher story Sapkowski wrote. It's basically young Geralt going on his first mission after leaving Kaer Morhen, where he trained to be a Witcher, and kind of learning the ways of the world a little bit and how people might view Witchers as monsters, even though they're supposed to help by killing monsters and all this stuff. Okay, so Bubo read a Russian translation, which is interesting. I didn't know. I wonder if that was an unofficial one. I didn't know that they had translated it into Russian already, because so the US release comes out September 30th. That's also when that's also when it's releasing kind of worldwide in like 19 different countries. Yeah. So Bubo said, by the way, this is my first Witcher book and last. Ouch, first of all. But the Witcher is kind of an interesting beast. Like, the books have some good things. They also can get very rambly, very preachy, very kind of silly at times. There's the one before this, Season of Storms, was another standalone, and that one lost me a little bit. There's like a 3-page section where Geralt just like debates the finer points of banking with someone. So they definitely can get a little weird. But yeah, Crossroads of Ravens is coming out on September 30th. And apparently, I mean, we have a listener who says they didn't like it. I will be reading it because I'm curious and I'm too invested not to, because I've read all the rest of them. But yeah, man, now I'm really curious.
It's going to have an early review. I like that.
Yeah. So Bubo said, I've heard that the one before the last was also awful, Season of Storms. I will say I did not particularly like Season of Storms, honestly. That is one of my least favorites in the series. So you're making me damn nervous here, but I do really like the cover art. I'm going to give it a chance. That was the news of this. I didn't expect us to be talking about whether it's good or not. The news was just that the cover art dropped today. So you have seen that. You can kind of find the official description of this. We wrote about it on the site today, but it's out there all over the place. September 30th is when the next Witcher book comes out.
I can't speak to whether it's good, but one book that I did really enjoy, I finally got around to reading it, is The Hedge Knight by George R.R. Martin, collected in this little compendium, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which combines all three of the Duncan Egg novellas Martin has written. Novellas, three of a planned 11 or whatever, so I'm sure that'll happen sometime soon. This novella, The Hedge Knight, is being turned into a new Game of Thrones prequel TV show called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Mm-hmm. Really briefly, it's about a knight named Sir Duncan the Tall, who is just a poor boy. Nobody loves him. He's just a poor boy from a poor family who travels seven kingdoms with his, as a squire with his master, Sir Arlen. Sir Arlen dies. He takes up a knighthood and he just tries to make good. And he meets a little precocious squire of his own named Egg, who is a tiny bald boy. And I finally read the book, the novella, not terribly long. Quite good. I get it. I can see it. I can see it on screen. It was charming. It was short. I have a bunch of thoughts about it. Where do I start?
So wait. Let's give some context here to start. So we've been wanting to talk about this novella for a while. Like you said, it's going to be A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Dan had not read it. I read it years ago. I haven't read it since. So we've been very psyched to talk about it. So do we want to do full spoiler chat here? What do you think?
Let's see where we go. If I feel spoilers coming on, I will let y'all know. I think I can probably do it without spoiling, but I'm not going to hold myself to that.
Yeah. There's one big twist that I don't know if we're going to be able to not spoil. But yeah, where do you want to start, Dan?
The line on the new show is that it's kind of like Game of Thrones, kind of like House of the Dragon, but it's lighter and funnier. The stakes are a little bit lower. It's a little more intimate. It's not a big sprawling cast. It's basically these two characters are at the heart of it, but there are quite a few supporting characters. I was happy to see as I read it, because I was wondering, like, how can they stretch this out to fill a whole season of TV? As I'm reading it, like, oh, we have the Laughing Storm. Oh, we have Tanzel. Oh, we have Arian Targaryen. Oh, we have Maker Targaryen. Oh, we have Baelor Breakspear. There's actually quite a lot of supporting characters mm-hmm. who I can see them giving space to sort of play. The Steely Pate, the blacksmith, had some good cracks. Arlen of Pennytree was pretty affecting in his, at least, little memories. A lot of little interstitial things that could be stretched out. So I liked that even though it was a pretty focused story, it felt, I don't know, like alive and lived in and bustling. So I liked the mood of it. I also liked the prose a lot.
It's good, right?
I want to read a short little excerpt. And for some reason, a Brandon Sampson comparison came to my mind. A bad one.
Nice.
There's this bit where Dunk, who is just this poor would-be hopeful knight from Flea Bottom, who's trying to impress people to kind of climb the ladder and maybe not have to sleep on the ground all the time and actually have a bed and a house and a livelihood.
Yeah.
But he goes to this tournament, and because he's just a poor guy, I keep thinking of Aladdin for some reason, he just kind of sets up shop under a tree where all the other knights have pavilions, which are these kind of fancy tents. And he's kind of trying to make them. He's trying to make the best of it. That tree supposed to be the tree where he sets up shop, or the tree under which he buries Sir Arlen of Pennytree? That's a tree in this book.
This is, you know, I haven't read it in a minute. This is obviously the tree that gets painted on the shield. I'm pretty sure it's the one he sets up shop under. I'll look at that while you talk.
Cool. And he's going to sleep in the dark under a tree, not under a pavilion. And he sees a shooting star. And he says, a falling star brings luck to him who sees it, Dunk thought. But the rest of them are all in their pavilions by now, staring up at silk instead of sky. So the luck is mine alone. And I was like, ooh, that's a good insight into this character, how he's kind of, he's poor, he's trying to make good, he doesn't have his advantages, but he finds a way to flip it, to turn it, and to have a bit of hope inside. And it was that kind of thing. I don't know why I thought of this. When I read Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn trilogy, my main takeaway was that this is perfectly organized and everything is in its place. But I never got the meaning and the depth that I wanted. And it's stuff like this, where you get this sort of flash of insight into why this character is doing the things that he's doing and the way he thinks, that makes me grab onto something, that gives me, I don't know, like a feeling of connection to the characters. And it kept going. Also, while this is a lighter, kind of more fun, frolicky, not as high stakes, there's still some intense stuff in here. There is a bit, this is a spoiler, but I'm not going to say any context. It's at a tournament, so they're all like tilting, you know, and the horses ride each other in the two lances. And the villain, who I will not reveal the identity of, that's how good I'm being.
Nice.
I see this coming. He stabs a horse through the neck into the tilt, and then it goes down and kicks around. And I was like, oh my God, that's really brutal. And it made me really hate him. And I was like, oh, I like this. I love hating a villain. I love wanting the villain to get defeated. And then they build up to this kind of face-off situation that I won't spoil either. But I could see that being really good on TV. The drawback I had was just that it was fairly short. It's a novella and a short story, and it feels like one. So there were things that, I don't know, I guess I'm trained to expect will be followed up on. Like, there's a girl involved, a woman named Tanzel, who kind of has a little flirtation with Dunk. And I'm like, I've watched a lot of sitcoms, movies, and TV shows over the years, so of course she's going to stick around, and like, they're going to have a denouement or some kind of resolution to that. And they really don't, because that's not what happens. It's more realistic. She gets out of Dodge, and she should, because she's in danger. Like, it makes perfect sense. But I'm so used to, I don't know, romantic comedies that I expect her to turn up at the end and then to share a kiss and for that to be the end or something. I don't know. So I was surprised she didn't turn back up. There's some of that where, like, the characters aren't, they're like, there are a lot of them, and a lot of them are drawn in a really fun way that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't as, some of them weren't as deep as I thought they would be. And then I remembered, like, oh, it's a short story, Dan. They're not going to be all sketched in, like, an incredible depth. Although I wonder if the show could do a little extending with some of that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the show, you know, if it fleshes stuff out more. I saw people asking if there's enough material in this for a season
there
of TV.
Is.
It's a 6-episode season. We don't know the episode lengths yet. I think that is the right, probably going to be a good amount for this series. I'm glad it's not more. I think if it was more than 6, I would be concerned. I think 6, I can get behind that. That tells me they're probably not going to go too wild off the rails making stuff up, because it is a fairly compact story. It's got very compelling beats throughout it. Some other things from the chats. Where are we? Someone said, guys, just give me your opinion. Did he get knighted? So the context for this, Dunk claims in this story that Sir Arlen of Pennytree knighted him on his deathbed as he was dying. This is Dunk's whole claim when he goes to the tournament and says, I am going to compete. I am a knight. I was knighted by my previous master on his deathbed. You're right. The story never makes it completely explicit. We never see that. I like to think Dunk was knighted on his deathbed or on Arlen's deathbed, but George R. R. Martin loves a bit of ambiguity.
Yeah, he does.
And I think this story is a great, you know, example of kind of a lot of the things he does really, really well, like those bits of ambiguity that will get us still talking about this. Like, you asked about this now in the chat. And like you said, it's been like 20 years since this book was released, but we still don't know. And that's interesting. And that keeps the story alive in a way. The detestable villains, like you said, Dan, the main villainous character.
Yeah, he's an ass.
He's an ass, and like few,
and there
I feel
are
like,
some other side ones who are also asses, and I'm not going to like them either, which is a good thing.
Yeah, few people write villains that you love to hate as well as George R. R. Martin, and I think it's nice to remember that with a story like this, like the Cersei Lannisters and Ramsay Boltons, and like the main villain of this is, he's not quite as bad as like a Ramsay Bolton, but he's cut from a similar.
Chance.
He's cut from a similar cloth to like a Joffrey.
You want folk to hate you? Kill an animal on screen.
Yeah.
That will do a lot of heavy lifting. You are right that there are some shades of other characters. There's also a character who reminded me a lot of Tyrion. I forget what his... Was it Daeron? Targaryen?
Yeah,
the drunk one?
Yes.
Like a kind of combination of Tyrion and a little bit of Rhaenyra. No, wait, who has some visions? Tyrion and Melisandre, if they were one person. Some extreme Tyrion lines, but I laughed at them. Like, they were well-written lines where he's talking about he was supposed to go find somebody. He's making the excuse, like, he wasn't at the bottom of my wine cup, and I hadn't looked anywhere else, so sort of trails off, that kind of thing. Or my brothers have my measure when it comes to fighting and dancing and thinking of reading books, but none of them is half my equal at lying insensible in the mud. Talking about a upcoming fight, but he is pithy. He's witty. They have good lines where I'm sure any actor would look at that and be like, oh, good. I get to be snarky and fun. But also he has a serious side to him, too. And again, not that deep. We're not with them for that long.
Yeah.
But there is something there to entertain and that I can enjoy. As for other questions about whether Dunk's knighted, I like that it's a little ambiguous. I don't think Dunk would lie about that, at least what I've known of him.
Well,
but I also appreciate that Martin, unlike Prentice Sanderson, who I hate, knows the value of leaving some things up to the imagination and not connecting every single dot and leaving some things just the way they are.
Yeah, I do think, you know, so this is, I don't think this is really a spoiler. It's hard to know because this hasn't been written about in the Dunk and Egg books. It's just Song of Ice and Fire lore. So Dunk, Sir Duncan the Tall, he eventually becomes the commander of the Kingsguard way down the line far after these three novellas. Martin hasn't really written about it aside from in like World of Ice and Fire. Victor says, I think it's more interesting if he makes it to commander of the Kingsguard without never having been actually knighted. That feels very GRRM-ish. And yeah, that is a very interesting concept and idea. And to me, I remember when I read this, it was like, was he knighted? On the one hand, he probably wouldn't lie. He seems like a pretty honest guy. On the other hand, it is kind of like, if Arlen didn't do it before he died and Dunk had invested like his whole life into squiring for this old guy who then kicked the bucket before he could like do the deed of knighting him, what else is he supposed to do? Like I could see him maybe being like, he meant to do it. He did it. You know, he meant to do it. all of that does feel very, very Martin-ish. And this, you know, this is kind of, I don't remember when the first book was published, but this is kind of him in his prime. It was part of an anthology called Legends, I think. I think this has been one of the Westeros things that it's like, please, if you're going to make more shows, this is the obvious next one to do, you know? That's why Martin made these novellas, because it was a story he was really compelled by and it has a lot of character in it. Ben Jackson's 1998. So this is like
long time ago.
This first one, part of, you know, we're talking about how good it is, how good the writing is, came out around the time of A Storm of Swords, which I believe was not too long or Clash of Kings rather. Good stuff. Very good stuff. And I can't wait to see it as a show. I'm glad you liked it, Dan.
Liked it. Yeah, there's just nothing really. I don't know how you can really gainsay it. I'm looking forward to it too. Could be a really fun watch. The only problem is that there aren't more of them. There probably won't be.
Well, here's my question for you. Will you be going on to the Sworn Sword?
I'm sure I will. I don't know if I'll do it immediately. Absolutely I will. Second? I don't know.
The Sworn Sword is underrated, in my opinion. I feel like a lot of people say that's their least favorite. I really liked the Sworn Sword, and I feel like it'll have a little bit of that sitcominess that you wished for. It has a little bit more of that.
Sitcominess.
It has a little bit more of that. But also, you know, it's about Dunk mediating between these two houses in kind of the wake of the Blackfyre rebellions, where some have fallen out of favor because they supported the wrong side. I like it a lot. It's got really cool like lore for the world and stuff like that. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, not coming out till 2026. You've got time if you, dear listener, watcher, viewer, whatever, would like to read these books. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, this omnibus edition, has all three that Martin has published.
Victor thinks it's as hard as Rural Juror or blah, 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 Sworn Sword. I don't think it's that bad. Swa, swa, swa.
Sworn Sword?
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Rural Juror. But
your point about Sanderson's interesting. I don't want to go too far off in the weeds because I know we're pushing time, but I agree with what you said. Sanderson can be very neat. You know, he plans out his stuff. Martin is a little bit more of a gardener with the way he writes, and his characters tend to feel a little bit more alive because of that, I think.
I think so, and I am drawn to that. I'm joking to say, hey, I don't hate Brennan Sanderson. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But there is something special about the way Martin writes that really appeals to me. It's why I've been doing this for as long as I have.
Yeah.
But Daniel, in other news, what are you and anybody else out there watching or reading?
Wow. There are other things. The main thing that I've watched since our last show is the final season of Cobra Kai. I finally caught up. I finished Cobra Kai and it was really good. The ending. Cobra Kai is funny because it started with this very, very simple premise of this washed up, you know, villain from the first Karate Kid movie who kind of gets redemption by restarting his dojo. And, you know, this idea of what if Daniel LaRusso was really the asshole in the original Karate Kid movie from this other kid's perspective. Like, it was very simple. And then by the final season, like, they really kind of blew some things up. You know, there's this rich guy, Silver, who was in the movies, but who does really underhanded, ridiculous supervillain stuff to try to win the tournaments. Cool. But at the end of the day, like, they really dialed into the emotional through lines of the series in a way that really stuck the landing for me. I think the ending was really, really satisfying. So that was awesome. I'm glad to have finished it. Like, it was a great ride, totally worth taking and a lot of fun all the way through. Yeah. Aside from that, I'm still watching Murderbot. What about you?
I never watched Cobra Kai. I'm not sure I will, but I'm glad you liked it. Okay. I have two things. One I can talk about, one I can't. I watched the Gilded Age premiere, which is so full of polite and genteel scandal, you won't even believe. I feel so bad about liking that show. It's just superbly wealthy, empty-headed people get upset about the smallest things, but they dress so well. The other thing, I've seen a really hotly anticipated TV show that's coming out very soon that's going to be very exciting, but I can't talk about because the embargo hasn't dropped. So you just get to guess what it is. But I'll say this. It's really exciting.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you talk about it next week?
Yes, it'll be out by next week. Oh, crap.
All right. Tune in. That was not a trap question. Tune in next week if you want to hear about this show that Dan has been teasing, that he's been dying to talk about.
It's a really big one. Yeah. I wish they would let me talk about it. But
soon.
In their infinite wisdom, they haven't, because they're so amazing over there at insert name of network or streaming service here.
Nice.
That's what I've been doing.
Nice.
I also have the Sandman screeners. So I'll get on those too soon.
Oh, cool.
Lots going on, man.
Sandman's got such a weird pall over it because of Neil Gaiman. Like, I didn't really get into the comic books, but I'm just like, it's coming back and I can't muster any excitement for it, which is too bad.
Is it a sci-fi show? Let's put it this way. Seafood. Okay, Daniel, nice. Let's move on to the WIC News Lightning Round. We go over a bunch of stories. We didn't have time to get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions. No more, no less.
Yes, let's do it. Are these in order? That is the question that I and everyone else are wondering, and the answer is kind of. Dan, let me ask you first. So Interview with the Vampire season 3 has officially begun filming.
Woo! I think this is, now that the time has gone, one of the best genre shows currently running. I think it is sexy. I think it is well written. I think it's exciting. I think it's juicy. I think it's bloody. I think it's gory. I think it's fun. I think it's deep. I think it's dramatic. I think it's funny. I think it's great. And it's going to be a musical next time, a rock opera. Sign me up so hard. Okay,
yes.
So I'm looking forward to that whenever it comes out. Daniel, Daisy Ridley's Star Wars movie about her character Rey is reportedly on hold. Is that a polite word for dead?
With Star Wars, it's hard to be sure, which means possibly. You know, I think the official word on this was, it's not that it's on hold indefinitely or anything. It's that they are focusing on The Mandalorian and Grogu and the Dawn of the Jedi movie from James Mangold. They're doing those first before they circle back to Rey. But then they announced Starfighter. So, like, are they really? Anyway, sorry, Daisy Ridley. I liked you as Rey. You deserve better. Dan, speaking of people who deserve better, namely everyone on Earth, J.K. Rowling, she has read the first two Harry Potter scripts for the show, says they're so good, and she worked closely with extremely talented writers. Why should we care?
I mean, because it's going to make news. We're going to be hearing about this for years, Daniel. Mm. Buckle up. What's weird about it is that J.K. Rowling is so politically charged for different reasons.
Yes.
Like, people who are progressive don't want to watch the show because J.K. Rowling's a transphobe. People who are conservative and regressive don't want to watch it because Snape was black. And it's and they're clashing, and it's so weird to watch. It's going to be a mess going up to that thing.
Yeah.
Daniel, Paid. Whoa. Did I put this in here?
No, I put that one in.
Pedro Pascal, actor, continues to blast J.K. Rowling, saying he can't stand fucking bullies.
Yeah, so Pedro Pascal, probably one of the most high-profile people who has blasted J.K. Rowling for these antics of just hyper-focusing on trans issues. Yeah, he says he can't stand bullies. I think he has a trans family member. So
yeah, sister.
This is personal for him. And also, he just doesn't like seeing one of the wealthiest people in the world shitting on one of the most vulnerable minorities in the world. So good on you, Pedro. It's good to know that we all chose right by loving you. here's some Outlander news for the Outlander peeps. So Stars has already renewed Outlander Blood of My Blood, the spinoff, for season two before season one even airs.
Good on them. Smart on them. I'm always saying I wish more networks would get their act together and renew shows early, would film shows back to back, make sure we can get a good schedule rolling. So this Outlander prequel renewed already, season two, season one hasn't even aired yet. That's nice. Hopefully the wait won't be that long.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Bless you.
Oh, I have to ask you something.
Yes.
Daniel. Charlie Cox from Daredevil, sorry, toward the end of this thing, has recorded all of his lines as Gustav in a very popular new video game called Claire Obscure Expedition 33 in just 4 hours. You had a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, I thought this was super interesting. So there's this video game, Claire Obscura Expedition 33. I love it. I've been playing it a lot. It's making huge waves. It's made by a small French studio and has been like the massive breakout success story of the year in gaming. Charlie Cox plays a character named Gustav. He hasn't done interviews about the game. He revealed recently he did his lines in like 4 hours. So he feels like a fraud when people congratulate him for it because he didn't work on it very long. But he still did a great job. I see someone asking about if we ever found out why I'm going to be away for an extended period of time in the chat. We'll talk about that after the lightning round. We got two more stories to go, so let's do that. Dan, Russell Crowe, the man behind Gladiator, the Gladiator, he has joined Chad Stahelski's Highlander reboot. He'll play Henry Cavill's immortal mentor.
You are all over these pronunciations. Oh, yeah, fun. Highlander. Immortal people need to cut each other's heads off with swords. Henry Cavill's one of them. We all love Henry Cavill. And Russell Crowe will play the Sean Connery role. I don't think his accent is quite as iconic, but I'm sure he can pull off wizened mentor quite well. Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel. And finally, Murderbot executive producer David S. Goyer is confident we'll get another season. And has plans for more Foundation. So Apple TV Plus shows are getting more things.
Yeah, David S. Goyer has his hands in a lot of different sci-fi shows all over the place. He also worked on Sandman. So he just kind of produces shows places. He said Murderbot is doing well enough that he thinks there's a very good chance it'll get another season. And he said Foundation season 4 is like a direct continuation of season 3. So they already have it planned out. So good for people who like Apple sci-fi shows.
As Victor says, maybe Russell Crowe will actually do a Spanish accent, not just, I'm Sean Connery and I'm from Spain. Yeah, sure you are, Sean. One last lightning round thing. Why are you going to be taking a break from the pod?
Yeah. This is an important thing for me to let people know. So I will, this is the last time I'll be on for a minute because I am having a baby and they're going to get here probably sometime next week or our due dates next week. So that is why I haven't really talked about this on the internet much because it's nice to occasionally keep the private life off the internet. But obviously our faithful viewers and listeners and friends, I want to make sure you all know that I did not fall into the void or die or any other such thing because I won't be here for weeks to probably a couple months after this.
But we will have guest hosts. We'll still have the show. I will have a rotating string of people I talk to. Maybe one just by myself and I'll just talk to the hand. we'll see. But yeah, Daniel, congrats, obviously. Bring Scruffy back there. Congratulations. Have a wonderful time. And we'll see you in a couple of months.
Thank you. Thank you.
But we will see all of you back here next week, where we will be reviewing a brand new exciting show that I'll finally be able to talk about. We are every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Winter Screen Facebook and YouTube page. Also download us whatever podcasts are available. Leave us a comment. Leave us a subscribe. Leave us a like. Tell all your friends about us. And have a beautiful week. Bye, everybody.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's data brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.